and a friend from the Equal Employment Opportunities Committee, a very attractive couple named David Schulte, a montage of friends, beginning with his 15-year-old schoolboy days on up through his very recent political activities.
I had not.
Knowing that some of my Alabama cousins were in town, I'd simply added them to his group. Josephine Patilla Clark from Tennessee now, Lucille Patilla Thomas and her husband, Dr. Jimmy, and their darling daughter Jean, now a fresh young married woman on her honeymoon without her husband, and about three of their friends from Alabama who came along. Varied as it was, it turned out nevertheless to be a congenial group. The fire was blazing. The library is such an inviting, hospitable room. And then we'd arranged a tour with Jim Ketchum for them. At that point, I said goodbye and went up to have my last visit with John and Nellie. I thought they would wait for tomorrow, but they were going to leave right away. One of the pleasantest times of this whole inaugural was the little 30 minutes I stole when Nellie had the Perry Basses, their son, and two or three other friends from Fort Worth up for coffee in the Lincoln Room. It's been good for us both to be together during this. But I had the unhappy feeling as I talked to them that they thought Walter and Marjorie, in taking up residence in Austin, were facing a rather rocky time. That they would have to go slow before being accepted, that things would not be quite as they'd been. Lyndon had a meeting in the Yellow Room of the House leadership. The Speaker, Carl Albert, Hale Boggs, Humphrey, of course, was there, and some of Lyndon's staff members, Busby, Valenti, Moyers, Cater, and all of the committee chairmen. Just before they were ready to leave, he asked me to come in and greet them. There was powerful Judge Smith of Virginia, though aging, Mendel Rivers, my friend of Charleston, Mills of Arkansas, and among others, three Texans, Wright Patman, Tiger Teague, and Mason. They'd had a lengthy, and I gather, a very good session on just how to start the legislative program. Humphrey and some of the staff lingered after the congressman left, and there was some absolutely marvelous conversation. I remember at one point Lyndon leaning right up face to face with Larry O'Brien and saying, "John Kennedy's watching us up in heaven. And we're going to wrap up all of his legislation and put it in a package and tie it up and label it JFK. Whatever it's labeled, if this impetus keeps rolling, there's going to be some passed." He asked Hubert to call Muriel to stay for dinner with us. And I got the Thornberrys, who arrived in just a few minutes. And the six of us had a delightful time. I have no illusions that a president and his vice president can maintain unbroken, day after day, a completely simpatico relationship. But it sure is pleasant to have it, basically, and we have it now. During the dinner, Eloise got up and made a most touching toast to me, a long quotation from Solomon about a virtuous woman looketh well to the ways of her household. It gave me a lot to live up to. It's been a wonderful day, a wonderful week. My only worry is that Lyndon got no rest this afternoon. Those messages to the Congress keep on rolling, overshadowed as they've been by the inaugural. And today was one of a crescendo of legislative activity. But it was a fairly early night, and a little bit before 12 we went to bed. I think at long last, Lyndon is really tired. He must also be proud.